G'day, we hope you're enjoying our podcast. Producing a podcast is costly, both time and money. If you'd like to show your support and offer a one-off payment, even the price of a coffee or a beer, that'd be greatly appreciated and would go a long way to support us. If you'd like to leave a donation, head to the show notes of this episode and click on the Acast supporter link. Be sure to leave your message of support too. Thanks again.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The thoughts and opinions shared in this podcast are just that. It's up to the listener to decide what is true and what is not true. This podcast contains coarse language, references to violence, sexual abuse, and murder, and may not be suitable for everyone. Discretion is advised.
It was one of the most brutal child killings in Australia's history. Leanne Holland's badly beaten body was found dumped in bushland in the outer western suburbs of Brisbane in 1991.
This was a vicious, brutal, sadistic murder of a 12-year-old girl.
The de facto of the 13-year-old's older sister was charged and convicted.
Queensland police say their review of the Leanne Holland case will be thorough.
If we uncover any new evidence, we'll certainly explore that.
Hi, my name's Graeme Stafford. I have not been involved in the production of this podcast, but have been invited to tell my side of the story. In 1991, I was sentenced to life in prison for the murder of Leanne Holland, a murder I did not commit. This is not my story. This is the story of the murder of Leanne Holland and a search for the truth, a search that continues to this day.
A 610 Media production. This is Who Killed Leanne Holland? Chapter 2. Graeme Stafford. A killer, accomplice, or victim. You decide. In the last chapter, we gave you a briefing on the story of who killed Leanne Holland. A vicious, brutal, unsolved murder that took place in Goodna, Australia, almost 30 years ago. We raised the possibility of other suspects for the murder. In this chapter, we talk in depth with Graeme Stafford, the only police suspect for the crime, whose conviction was quashed after he served 15 years imprisonment. Our interview with Graeme Stafford went for nearly 2 hours. There were many questions we needed to ask. Some questions we asked Graeme won't make a lot of sense, as this is only chapter 2 of the series and you don't have all the information as yet. This case is intricate and complicated by many twists and turns. We will do our best to present the information in a way that's easy to follow. With that said, here is a summary of the Crown case against Graeme Stafford. Remember, the finer details will be covered in a later chapter, as it's impossible to give all this information in just one chapter. For Graeme Stafford to be the killer, he had to have committed the killing between 8 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. on Monday the 23rd of September, 91. Graeme Stafford had a rostered day off work on that day, and Leanne was on school holidays. The case against him was this. Leanne wanted to dye her hair. The police allege Graeme helped Leanne dye or streak her hair in the bathroom. It was then, while they were alone, that he made sexual advances on her. It escalated somehow, and he beat her to death right there in the bathroom with a hammer he owned that later mysteriously disappeared. He then carried Leanne's lifeless body out of the house, down the front stairs, in full view of the hotel across the street, and placed her in the boot of his car. It was never disputed Graeme was busy doing everyday chores that day. He worked on his car, he went to lunch, he went to the shops, visited a friend, fielded phone calls and washed his car. He heard his arm, he said, when he was working on his car, and later attended the doctor. 2 days later, on Wednesday the 25th of September, Graeme got ready for work. But instead of driving straight to work, he went out to visit a friend called Arthur Power. There was no one home. Police claimed, in fact, he went to Redbank Plains to dump Leanne's body. His car was sighted at the dump site that morning, and tyre impressions found at the scene matched identically with the two different tyres he had on his car. Despite his denials of involvement, he was arrested and convicted of murder. It was described as a strong forensic and circumstantial case, but later investigation showed many difficulties with the ground evidence. After his conviction was overturned, the QPS conducted a review of the original investigation. They concluded Graham Stafford was the killer and closed their file. However, they have refused to release the review and vigorously fought the many court applications by Graham Stafford's lawyers to attempt to obtain it. 6 years later, it has still not been released. The report was, however, leaked to a commercial TV station who used it to produce a commercial program showing Graham Stafford was the killer. Graham was interviewed on the program. It is hoped this podcast will force the Queensland government to hold a coronial inquest into the death of Leanne Holland.
My name is Graham Stafford. I was in a relationship with Leanne Holland's older sister, Melissa Holland. We lived with her sister and father at 70A Alice Street, Goodna. Melissa and I both worked at B&D Roller Doors, which is how we met, and we'd been going out for approximately 11 months.
What age were you in when you went to prison?
28.
Tell me about your full criminal history.
I don't have any criminal history.
Nothing?
Nothing at all.
And did you have any run-ins with police before this?
I guess only if you include speeding, occasional speeding too.
Okay. So you've never been interviewed by police for any other offence apart from the Holland murder?
No.
Ever been under the care of a psychologist or a psychiatrist apart from prison? I know you had some meetings with those people there, but...
No, none whatsoever.
Do you have history of sexual deviancy?
No.
So not long after the Leanne Holland murder happened and her body was found, a senior police officer said at a news conference, the offender is obviously not the full quid. Does that describe you at all?
Not at all.
And tell me about your work history. Have you ever held a full-time job?
I think I've been unemployed for a total of probably 18 months back in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty much by choice because I was doing a bit of travelling around. But other than that, I've held full-time jobs throughout. I started out serving an apprenticeship and completed that. I went on to work at another car yard, sort of working on cars for a little while, decided it wasn't what I wanted to do. And not long after that, I probably started at B&D Roller Doors, which I worked for up until my arrest.
What was your job description?
At the time, I was one of the computer press operators that was in charge of the huge press that created the actual roller door itself. But obviously there would be other tasks as well.
Do your immediate family support your claim of innocence?
Yes, they do. Yeah, my father passed away a couple of years ago.
I'm sorry to hear that.
But, yeah, mum, dad,
yeah,
my sister,
mm-hmm.
Brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
That's direct family. As far as friends, yeah, also got a bit of support there as well.
And did your family ever doubt you?
I guess, you know, realistically, they probably have to ask themselves, like anybody in that situation, whether they had things wrong. But no, they've been totally supportive.
Tell me about Melissa Holland. Like, she's refused all requests for interviews from a lot of media sources, including us. She hasn't answered us.
Mm.
What can you tell me about her as a person and...
She was, you know, just a friendly sort of girl. That's how we sort of got talking, you know. She was pretty laid back and I think our first date, you know, was down the Gold Coast, went to the Pancake Manor, and we enjoyed the same sort of things. We liked music, you know. It's on record that we took Leanne to the Kylie Minogue concert, which We also went and saw In Excess in the early days, which was... So we had the similar sort of interests, you know. We enjoyed going out and catching up with people.
And when you were arrested, Melissa was supportive of you, is that correct?
I believe, well, certainly initially. She was supportive, yeah.
And did you see it change when she started to pull herself away?
Not really, because once I was arrested, she told Mum that she'd been advised she couldn't have any contact with me. Mm-hmm. So I guess I didn't really see what was going on or what was going through her mind or...
You can't... Do you know why, without speculating, do you know why she might not have wanted to contact you or thought she couldn't contact you?
Well, I guess it comes down to whether she either was just following legal advice or whether she knew something she didn't want to tell me or whether she actually thought I was guilty. I don't know. There's possibilities either way, I guess.
Mm. There was one thing I wanted to clear up after I interviewed Graham Stafford. He said Melissa Holland pretty much cut ties with him after he was arrested. And I thought, if that was me and I was arrested for killing my girlfriend's sister, I would be trying to contact them to plead my case. But he said he didn't. So I called him up and asked him to explain it. Here's what he said.
No, I've not made any attempt to contact her whatsoever. I figured, well, if she wants to contact me, she can. But if I attempt to contact her, then it's probably going to, be construed as possibly a bit intimidation or whatever. You know, I just figured I'd let her do her own thing. You know, so I haven't tried to get in touch with her at all.
All right, so we're going to get down to the nitty gritty. So, nearly 15 years—that's a life sentence, right? You've served a life sentence.
Yes.
Tell me about the moment when you heard the jury say guilty.
That was it was pretty it's hard to put into words. I think when they sort of came back and found me guilty, the thing that sort of overrode that was hearing my sister screaming in the back, sort of thing, you know. And all the upset that they were going through, you know. I didn't really, I mean, I think I just sort of dropped back into the seat and just, it was, yeah, I couldn't believe it.
Was it like a, was it almost like shock? Did you think that was going to happen?
Yeah, I think, no, I certainly didn't think I was going to be found guilty. I mean, there was things that took place during the trial that obviously I wasn't real happy about, that I thought, well, weren't there was sort of things being said that I knew wasn't true. But I guess that's the court, sort of the way courts work, you know. They sort of make things or say things, and it's up to the jury whether they believe it or not.
But you thought, when you were getting interviewed and all that, you thought surely this nightmare is going to come to an end and I'm not going to be...
Yeah, I mean, I sort of, you know, I went down there with the full intention of trying to help out. I've sort of over the years listened back to the things that I've said during the interviews, and I shake my head myself. I think, well, you know, I was just an easy sort of, not a target, so to speak, but I just had so many things that I was confused about, because Monday for me was just a normal day. You know, I didn't go around going, this is the time now, I'm going here. This, you know, it was just a normal day, and I had no real sort of idea what was about to happen, you know.
Do you remember what the judge said to you when he sentenced you?
I remember the prosecutor, David Bullock, arguing that I should never be released, and the judge response to that was that he wasn't convinced of the circumstances of this gentleman, and it sort of, you know, I don't think I thought about it at the time, but I thought it was ironic that he was calling me a gentleman and I've just been sentenced to life for murder.
What happens after that?
I went back to a remand centre in Brisbane and was there for a couple of days. That was pretty ordinary. I mean, the food was woeful.
Mm.
From there, I think I got transferred to Bogger Road, which probably a lot of people don't remember Bogger Road. It was a really old, it's a historic site now, a really old prison, and turning up there, it was just, you can't describe it. The noise that was coming from the, what they call the cages and things like that, and, I got out and I was told to walk up to this, little area where the officer was. And I can't remember exactly what I said, but I used the word mate, and that was something you learn not to do, because he turned around and said, "I'm not your effing mate," sort of thing, and blah, blah, blah. And from there on, you go through the whole process of delousing and being strip searched. And I was put into a set, well, it's sort of like a cell in the medical area sort of thing, on suicide watch. And
was there any reason for that, or was that just something they do?
That's just something they do, I think.
Okay. So you didn't give any indications that you were...
No, suicidal, no. But every hour, on the hour that I was in there, on a nighttime sort of thing, the doors would be kicked and made a loud sort of noise, obviously in an attempt to make sure that I couldn't get any sleep. I think that's probably in that jail there is where I got diagnosed with PTSD.
Right.
Because I did have a breakdown.
Okay.
And that's how I got transferred to Wakehall.
Okay. So beforehand you hadn't had any mental health issues, but after what happened, the conviction and going to jail, and you developed post-traumatic stress disorder?
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of symptoms were presenting themselves to you?
I guess probably like a nervous thing, I couldn't sort of relax.
Mm.
I would start crying. Basically, without sort of having anything to, sometimes I wouldn't know what I'm crying about, and it would just sort of come on. Obviously, even now, I think, you watch the news and you see really tragic events sort of thing, and that affects me. I mean, obviously affects a lot of people, but, it's just something that I've never really been able to get over.
Okay. Do you still have PTSD now, or has that been treated? Or
no, I still have it.
You still have it. Did you have any incidents in jail where you were assaulted or anything of that nature?
Yes. Yes, yeah. I was assaulted by probably three or four people at the one time when I was at Arthur Gorrie Remand and Reception. I'd been at Wakehall after Bogger Road for a time period, and then for some reason I think the government decided they were closing Bogger Road down, and they had to sort of do a bit of management with prisoners, so I was one of the unfortunate ones that went over to Arthur Gorrie, which was a mix of ex-Bogger Road and Wakehall prisoners. And there was a point in time where they came up, and I knew something was going on, because I could see people hanging around outside the door, and it was easy to get inside somebody's cell, because you just had to use a teaspoon to go down the lock and you break into their cell just like that. And one of the guys came in and he sort of got his arms up saying, "No, it's all good." And I sort of knew what was happening, because there was a inmate in the cell next to me who'd copped it first, and this went on for probably 20, 30 minutes. I actually heard him get to the intercom and call out for help, but nothing came. So I had no chance. There was, you know, me, little old me against four guys, and fortunately or unfortunately, I got knocked out pretty quickly. And then they proceeded to kick the living daylights out of me. I actually, apparently I walked to the medical centre within the prison, but I have no recollection of it. I was then transferred to hospital in town, and the dog squad officer jokingly said, oh, at least we know what size shoes they were, because there was shoe prints all over my back, even after going from the prison to the hospital, could still see them. So I guess I'm lucky to still be here.
That was just the one occasion like that?
That was pretty much the only occasion.
Were you in protective custody after
that?
I
was. Well, yeah, that was technically, that was protective custody.
Right.
Where I was assaulted. But yes, I was in protective custody up until the point that I went to Palin Creek on the prison farm.
And for the listeners, just so they can get an idea of your stature, you know, when you're describing that scene, how tall are you and how much did you weigh back in those days?
I probably weighed about 56 kilo, and I'm 5 foot two and a half.
Yeah. Lucky. And those three or four guys were bigger?
Yeah. The irony was, one of the guys that assaulted me, I ran into him when I was put into Auscare, which is a halfway house in South Brisbane.
Okay.
And he had this beard on him, and I didn't recognise who he was at first, but he obviously recognised me, and he was sort of looking pretty anxious. Anyway, eventually he came over and introduced himself, and I realised he was one of the guys involved in the assault, and he just wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to cause any trouble for him. Make, you know.
Well, and so what, you forgave him?
Well, I wasn't there to make any trouble. I mean, you know, I've just walked into a halfway house knowing that I'm actually technically out of prison sort of thing, and hoping to be home very shortly. So, yeah, it wasn't in my interest to start any, you know, trouble.
No.
Just while we're on the matter, do you know the height and weight of Leanne Holland at the time she was murdered?
I believe she was around the same height as me, maybe fractionally tall. Her weight was around 42 kilo.
Okay. All right, so in 2009, your conviction was quashed, is that right?
That's correct.
So just for people who aren't aware of legal matters, where does that leave you now?
Well, it's just, I'm just like you. I have no record.
Okay.
You go search on the files and there's just, there is nothing.
Okay. You're aware the DPPs have said they won't retry you?
I am, yes.
So with that in mind, and with the fact that you've done your life sentence, you could walk away, but you're still maintaining, you're still protesting out there saying that you're innocent and you want your story heard. What drives you to do that and not just be like, all right, I'm out of here?
I guess some people might say I'm stubborn. I just don't want, you know, I mean, I'm 56 now, you know, I don't know how long I'm going to be around for, but I don't want my name sort of left with a question mark long after I'm gone for the sake of my, you know, my family sort of, you know, it's not fair. And let's, you know, not forget that this is more so about Leanne as well as myself, because they seem happy to just accept that it's now what they call an unsolved murder.
And do you ever have moments where you think, oh, I just can't be bothered anymore and I don't want to have to deal with this?
I do. You know, I mean, I've got a, you know, I'm happy in my job, I'm happy in my relationship. We get on, you know, we have a great time sort of thing. So there is times where you think, oh, you know, really? It's just become so consuming of my life that it is hard to sort of go through it all again, you know, go back through all the paperwork or whatever and trying to find stuff. I mean, I'm still, all these years later, finding things out that I didn't realise back then, you know. And it's...
All right, so do you realise that by doing this, you know, some people might, I don't know, take your words the wrong way, or this might come back and bite you in the ass? All these interviews and all that stuff, does that ever cross your mind?
Well, not really, no. I think it's, you know, a good thing that there's people still interested in trying to get to the bottom of it.
So according to the police review, they were happy with what they had done. We haven't read the review, but we've heard little snippets on the media. They were happy with their case against you. How does that make you feel, and does that raise any questions for yourself? Or
I guess the only question I have is why it went from being a promised transparent review to now a sort of like not to be seen by anyone at any cost sort of thing. You know, they didn't want, you've got to remember back then when Bob Atkinson was the commissioner, he didn't really want the review to take place, and it was only through media pressure that he eventually gave into that. And all these years later, now we are in the situation where we can't even see it.
And does it concern you at all that they say they are happy with the fact that they charged you and they think they had the right person? Does that concern you at all, or do you just think...
No.
No?
No.
Okay. So why were you both at home on the Monday that Leanne Holland was murdered?
I was on a roster day off.
Okay.
And I think Leanne was on school holidays, like that just started.
Mm. And this is September...
1991.
Mm. Tell me your recollections of that day.
Yeah. I sort of...
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Look back over it now and think... A lot of the things that I did was just so sort of meaningless that that's probably why I don't recall exactly when I did them or in what order sort of thing. But I know that I recall Leanne saying something about wanting to dye her hair or sort of streak her hair or whatever, because I had streaked hair at the time, you know, just sort of like highlights, whatever they call them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a casual conversation. I mentioned that there was still some left in my kit. If it was all right with her sister, she could, you know, have that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, at some point, I think it was around half past nine, she said she was going down the shops. So I was in the bedroom. And I said, okay. And that was the last time I saw her.
Okay. So when you were talking about the hair dye, where did that conversation take place?
That was probably in the hallway, I think, or a lounge room.
Mm-hmm.
And the kit was in the bedroom at hand sort of thing, so I just sort of showed it to her, and I think she took it into the lounge room, whatever, and that was the last I saw of her. I think it was on the... dining table, something.
Mm-hmm. So she said she was going to the shops at about 9:15 or 9:30.
Yeah.
Did she say what shop?
No.
No. And what happened after that?
Well, I basically just went back to, I think I'd done a few dishes. I'd been listening to a bit of music. I think I'd been recording a bit of music.
Mm-hmm.
I probably messed about with the car because, like I say, I was always sort of messing about with the car, doing different things, you know. And I knew I'd, at some point during the day I had to change the shock absorbers. I bought new shock absorbers for it. There was a number of phone calls. I think Robbie, mate who we'd been down the Gold Coast with that weekend, rang up because he was also on a rostered day off.
Another co-worker?
A co-worker, yeah.
Robbie?
Nindorf.
So you guys exchanged a couple of phone calls?
Well, he rang up. He was wanting to know if I wanted to go over and have a few more beers sort of thing. And you know, I think we probably, if I'd gone over, we'd have ended up down the Kenmore Tavern just having a few drinks and playing pool. And because they lived over at Pinjarra Hills over the other side of the river, it would have taken quite a sort of like chunk out of the day sort of thing. And it's things I wanted to do, you know. Like I say, I had work to do on the car. So I said no, it's sort of.
What did you do the night before, the Sunday night?
The Sunday night? I think we were over at Bob and Mandy's because they lived with her parents, and I think we'd watched the grand finals at Penrith Canberra in 91. That was after getting back from the Gold Coast.
That's right, yeah.
So we probably would have just, by the time we got back, we probably just would have unpacked and, you know, had dinner or something, or had something to eat. Well, unless, I can't remember, we may have had dinner at Bob and Mandy's, but, yeah, we wouldn't have gone out or done anything. We'd have just gone to bed.
And that was you and Melissa?
Yeah.
And when you got home, do you remember if Leanne was home that night, Sunday night?
I would assume so, but I couldn't say I have a specific recollection of her being home.
Where was her bedroom in relation to your bedroom? Did she sleep in a bedroom upstairs?
She slept in... Her bedroom was next to ours, opposite the bathroom. And she did have a bed in there, but it was consisted basically of a foam mattress. So often she'd take the foam mattress downstairs and she would... stay downstairs with the father in the underneath the house sort of thing. And occasionally she would even just fall asleep in the big, like they had a big basket cane chair in the lounge room, and she'd fall asleep in that watching TV because she had a TV in there as well.
How long did you live there with Leanne for?
It was only a few months.
Like 3-4?
Probably 4 months, yeah.
So we've covered till 9:30 and you did some dishes, you're listening to music. What time do you think you went to work on your car?
I sort of think that it was around just 10 o'clock, somewhere just after 10 o'clock. I'd taken it out around the back and there was a big board, pine sort of chipboard thing at the side of the house. I put that down so I could lay on that rather than on the grass. I remember that next door neighbour, she was hanging washing out because you could see directly, it was just like a little wire fence separating. So she could see me working on the car, and I was, you know, said g'day and whatnot. They're Vietnamese, so they sort of spoke broken English but always seemed friendly enough.
So they vouched for you working on your car? They could vouch for
well,
you?
Well, they were there all day, but you probably realised that the police claimed they weren't there at all. They were at a funeral all day.
Yeah.
And that probably, you know, that's a whole other matter, I guess, you know, because they were planting a pawpaw tree later in the morning sort of thing, and they were pretty much in the garden for... most of the, large sections of the day sort of thing.
How long do you think you took to replace the shock absorbers?
It wouldn't have been that long. I think I only ended up, I'm not sure it's that long ago, but I think I only ended up replacing one of them. Hmm. I can't, I'd have to, look back through it all, but I'd had it up on the jack, and as I was trying to wiggle the one that I'd got in there, it sort of slid off the jack and caught my elbow inside the guard and just sort of gave me a dead arm, which sort of is a bit painful. Anyway, I was probably only working on the car, say, half an hour, 40 minutes, if that.
So that might put you to 10:30 or 10:45-ish. What happened after that? What do you recall?
I know sometime after 11, I went down to Big Rooster to get a snack pack, whatever they call them.
Red Rooster?
Well, it's Red Rooster now. Yeah. Back,
was it
back
Big then, Rooster
it
back
was
then?
Back then, it was Big Rooster, yeah.
Oh.
Same thing.
Okay.
I'm not sure what else I did, sort of thing. I mean, I'd probably have to go back through everything and remind myself what I did. I know I, at some point, I went over to Arthur's, Jack's dad, to see how he was going. Melissa and I had lived with him for quite a while, and obviously, being a close friend, sort of thing, I'd often call in on him and see how he was going, sort of thing.
And was Jackie home at that time?
She was doing his shopping.
Okay.
Because Arthur just didn't go out very far.
Mm.
You know, he was a pensioner sort of thing.
Mm. And so you didn't see Jackie?
I did. She dropped his shopping in while I was there.
Mm.
It was just basically bring the shopping in. Hi, Gray, how you going? And she had the kids in the car, so she left.
Mm-hmm.
But, she did see me on the day, yeah.
Okay. Did you wash your car or anything like that?
I did. I took the car up to Red Bank Plains Car Wash. It's one of those little buy-a-ticket sort of things. So I walked in and bought a ticket, came out, put the number in the thing, and it was just one of those quick sort of roller washes. And then went back. I think, I'm trying to think what time Melissa rang. She rang during the day to make sure I hadn't forgotten to get dog meat for the dog. And I'd gone down to Franklin's to pick up some dog meat. And I think I got orange juice as well. That would have been possibly 2 o'clock. That would have been before the car wash, I think, because the car wash ticket had $2.59 printed on it.
So it was Arthur Powers and then the car wash?
Yeah, Powers was around lunchtime. So.
Okay. After the Red Rooster or Big Rooster?
Yeah.
Did you take the Big Rooster there to eat it or did you eat
I think I did. Yeah, I think I did. Yeah.
And the car wash, was that just the outside or did you vacuum the inside as well or clean the inside?
No, just a wash on the outside sort of thing.
Yeah. And that, is that something that you did regularly?
Yeah, I was pretty OCD with the car sort of thing, you know. It was my pride and joy.
Mm.
I think that's pretty well known. I was always either cleaning it or messing around with it sort of thing, you know. It was the sort of vehicle that, you know, people would look at and might not necessarily be their thing, but, you know, it'd sort of stand out.
Did you murder Leanne Holland?
No. No, I didn't.
Were you involved in any way?
No.
Did you accidentally kill her?
No.
Were you present when she was killed or abducted?
No.
Do you know who killed Leanne Holland?
No.
Did you ever help her streak her hair?
No.
No.
No, I... When I got mine done, Jack's sister used to do it for me, and I'd basically, you know, take a bottle of Tia Maria around when we'd have a few drinks while she was doing it. That's probably, other than knowing that she would pull my hair through the skull cap, that was probably my total knowledge of how to streak hair. I'm not a hairdresser. I've got no idea.
Okay.
I wouldn't attempt to, certainly wouldn't offer to do somebody's hair because I hadn't got a clue what was involved.
Mm-hmm. Because the prosecution case, was that suggesting or were they alleging that you were in the bathroom alone with Leanne? There was a...
Yeah, that's what they suggested. But it didn't happen. To my knowledge, to the best of my knowledge, I don't think Leanne accessed it. You know, as far as I know, she put it on the table and that's where it stayed. So if she's somehow used it after I'd gone out sort of thing, then it's news to me.
Was your car ever at the body dump site?
No.
Was blood found on any of those shoes?
No.
No blood?
No.
Was blood found on the clothes you were wearing that Monday?
No.
The clothes that were seized?
No. They pretty much seized all my clothes. The clothes that I was wearing on the day were in the wash basket.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd taken those and they'd taken all the bedding. This is the reason why from Wednesday onwards, I believe, it was Wednesday, that I had to find somewhere else to sleep because the bedding was all gone. Melissa also went over to her grandmother's across the road and I moved in back in with Arthur.
Okay. Is that because the police came and took?
Yeah, well, there was just no bedding. There was no, I had no clothes there either.
Yep. So your drive to Arthur Powers' place on the Wednesday morning was problematic for you, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
And can you describe that?
Well, obviously, the suggestion was that I'd gone up to the dump site, which technically is in the same direction, although I think you'll find that it was... not a lot of distance, but I think it is some distance further than if you were going to, say, Arthur Powers, because obviously you don't go all the way up past the car wash. You actually go down Kruger Parade. But they made the suggestion that I'd actually been up to the dump site as opposed to trying to call in on Arthur Power. And I, I think... From memory, we didn't know at the time, but Arthur was babysitting for Jack's kids, so he actually wasn't home.
So you knock on the door?
Got no reply.
Yeah. And did any neighbours see you or anything like that?
I found out later that Arthur's next-door neighbour, Paul DeSorti, heard me pull up and he actually, I think in... the second appeal, I think he must have spoken to my solicitor about it then, but nothing really came of it, sort of thing.
So why did you go to Arthur Bower's house?
I just wanted to talk to somebody that was like a peer sort of thing, given what was going on. I had no one else. I had no one else to talk to. I mean, Melissa was obviously worried sick. Terry wasn't somebody that I really knew, and I think the whole time that we lived there, I spoke 12 words to him. He was not the sort of person that was a conversationalist. And given the situation, I feel I just needed somebody adult-like to talk to. And Arthur was probably the closest person to do that.
So were you on your way to work or were you meant to go to work on Wednesday?
I was on my way to work. I was in my work clothes and... I just quickly thought, oh, well, I'll just go up and let Arthur know the situation. He's usually up at that time anyway because he gets up early to watch different football and whatnot, English football. As I say, I knocked on the door and there was no response, so I just went to work.
Do you know what time that might have been?
It was approximately quarter past. I think I set off at quarter past, and I think I went back down past Alice Street, probably 25 past, around there somewhere.
I'm six not, or
six, three? Yeah. Yeah. I was no more than, like, I think 10 minutes late for work.
Hmm. Okay. So what time are you meant to start work?
I think it was about 6:30, something like that,
right.
From memory.
So to get to Arthur Power's house, do you have to go on Redbank Plains Road?
Well, there are two ways. You can go up the highway sort of thing, but that's probably a longer way of doing it. The quicker way would be to just tuck on to Kruger Parade off Redbank Plains Road, and then you virtually come down off Kruger Parade into Collingwood Park.
So are you going past the dump site?
No.
That's further, is it?
That's a lot. Well, it's considerably further, yeah.
Okay.
You've got Kruger Parade on your right. You then go up past the Redbank Plains Tavern, if you keep going, where the car wash and the garage is situated. You then turn right and go for another couple of Ks down to where the intersection with, I think it's Greenbank Village Road.
Mm.
So it's still a bit of a distance away.
Because obviously the police claim that, in fact, you didn't go Arthur Power's house, but then you would have gone to the body dump site.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, and did they present that to you in the interview with you?
I don't recall it being said, but I'd probably have to go back through all the interviews and see what was made of that. But as I said, I left in my work clothes. I was still in my work clothes. I turned up to work, and I just find it all a bit laughable that you can sort of, you know, go up to a body dump site in your work clothes and not get blood on them.
Hmm.
You know.
Did they find any blood, any of Leanne Holland's blood in the boot of your car?
They said they found a spot of blood on my tool bag, and I think two spots on Melissa's blanket.
And how do you explain that?
Over the years I've sort of rattled my brain to consider the tool bag particularly, you know, I mean, okay, it was in and out of the car on occasion, but the only injury I can recall Leanne suffering was when she cut a foot and came down the stairs sort of thing, but I can't remember any specific moment where that would have then been, okay, maybe that's how it got there. There was another occasion, I think, when we took Leanne to the Rocker Stedford in Brisbane, and her and I think it was Trish put all their belongings in the back of the car. I think possibly that may have been how the strand of hair got in there, because, you know, they were doing all the hair and makeup and all that sort of stuff when they got to the Stedford. But yeah, I can't explain how that came to be.
Okay. Did the police take clippings of your fingernails?
They did.
And what happened to them?
I have no idea. They took, when I got to the watch house, they took fingernail clippings and pubic hair, and I never heard anything about it since.
Not even at the trial?
No.
Are you a victim here?
Yes.
Hmm. Are you angry about what happened?
I am.
Hmm. What are you angry about? The fact that you spent 15 years incarcerated, that you've never been compensated. Like what really gets you?
I think, and initially I think it's the fact that I was incarcerated for 15 years for a crime I didn't commit.
And you won't have kids now.
Missed that opportunity.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. I've missed weddings, and you know, my sister got married while I was inside.
Mm.
There's just countless things that I missed out on. You know, I mean, my dad was still, you know, quite a healthy man back when I was first arrested. And I've no doubts that my incarceration had something to do with the way his, you know, health deteriorated.
Right.
I'm angry, I guess, just the lack of acknowledgement from the authorities that, you know, they think they can just sort of go, oh, well, we still think he's guilty, but we'll just stick him in the middle here somewhere and that's where he stay, you know. Question mark. You
this
know.
Is your life. You've got to live every day.
Where people, you know, from day to day you'll have people looking at you and thinking, oh, that's that guy. And, you know, I mean, okay, I'm lucky in the respect I don't get a lot of or very little negative feedback, but, you know, it still would be nice to have a full stop there.
What would you like to see happen from now on? What would you like to see happen out of all this?
Well, I guess it's I think realistically, as far as people going to jail, you know, maybe they need something like the Criminal Cases Review Committee they have in the UK, so that things like that can be looked at by people independent, sort of thing. It's hard to put into words. It's like you know, it just happens so quickly, a roller coaster, that you don't, you know, even things like when you're giving statements, like my original statement that I gave, there was so much that I didn't mention that, you know, in hindsight, you know, I probably should have thought about, and I just went in there just, oh, yeah, I'll give a statement, and I didn't really even read it, you know.
You didn't read it to check it before you...
Well, I perused it, you know, and I thought, well, yeah, that's what you do. You just go in, you give a statement, and I perused it, and they just picked holes in it towards the end of the week, you know, and made a big deal of it.
Do you think a coronial inquest should be held?
I think a coronial inquest should be held, but I think it needs to go further than that. I think given the reluctance that they've had for transparency, I think an inquiry of some description should be held.
Like another review of the review?
Well, I think it needs to be taken out of QPS hands. I think it needs to be someone independent of that. I just hope that this podcast in some way goes to apply pressure in the right circles to force, well, basically encourage authorities to do the right thing by Leanne and by myself.
Well, thank you, Graham Stafford, for answering these questions and being willing to come here and putting it all on the table and giving us your time. I know you accompanied us down to Goodna last week as well. So, yeah, thank you for doing that. And I hope we come to the resolution at the end of this as well.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rob.
There are detailed maps of both crime scenes and places visited by Graham Stafford available to see on whokilledleanneholland.com. Join us next time on Who Killed Leanne Holland to hear about the various persons involved in this tragic drama. As well as talking about the central characters, we also discuss MMO, means, motive and opportunity, which are central to this case. We also cover the difficult subject of the time of Leanne's death, which is absolutely crucial to the Crown's case. At the end of the series, I will invite you to be the jury in the trial of the Crown versus Graham Stuart Stafford and cast your vote, guilty or not guilty. Regardless of your vote, you will also be invited to sign a petition addressed to the Attorney General requesting a coronial inquest into the death of Leanne Sarah Holland. It doesn't matter if you are not a resident of Queensland, nor even live in Australia. Just add your support to show the Attorney General an inquest is in the public interest, despite claims to the contrary by the Queensland Police Service. Thank you for listening to Who Killed Leanne Holland. Who Killed Leanne Holland is a 610 Media production. This episode was written and fact-checked by Graham Crowley. Recording, editing and theme music by Jamie Poltz. This episode was mixed and mastered by Tom Johnson at Jampot Studios. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Just look for Who Killed Leanne Holland. You can also head to our websites to read our blogs and see pictures at www.whokilledleanneholland.com and www.610mediagroup.com. If you're enjoying the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, and don't forget to subscribe. All links will be on our show notes.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.